I had four or five different jobs at IBM, starting like working on some of the hardest teams in tech to working for the CEO chairman's office in the end by the last 10th year. And so I climbed the ranks really well on my own accord.
This is the Indianness Podcast, stories of success from leaders and change makers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together, because every story is unique. I'm very excited to have Shruti Gandhi with us today. She's the general partner of Array Ventures, which is an enterprise data venture fund. She's also the commissioner of the San Francisco Employees Retirement System, which administers a $34 billion investment fund. But I invited her on this show as she's had a very interesting journey from working in a company to running a company and now investing in those companies in what is generally perceived as a male-dominated environment. I wanted to find out about her journey. Welcome, Shruti. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to share my life journey.
Wonderful. Shruti, as they say, to really know about somebody's journey, we have to go right to the beginning. So as we do on this show, let's go right to the beginning. Where were you born, Shruti?
I was born in India. I was born in a hospital in Gujarat, but I was raised mostly in Bombay.
Okay. When did you move to Bombay?
I'm from Bombay. My mom just went back to Gujarat for just the birth, basically.
Okay. So you were brought up in Bombay.
Yeah. I'm born and raised in Bombay. Yeah. I'm from Bombay.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about mom and dad. What did your mom and what? Tell me about your dad first.
Dad always ran businesses, and mom also ran some small businesses and they both raised us together.
Okay. What kind of business was dad in, Shruti?
My dad actually works on these interior commercial ceilings, acoustics, more construction world, basically, but for commercial spaces.
Okay. Can you explain that? He worked in construction?
No, he did interiors for construction.
Interiors for construction, yeah. In Bombay.
Yeah. All over India, but yeah.
All over India. That's wonderful. And what about mom?
Mom actually was pretty good at finances and ran businesses in the house. It was just so she could be also around us. But she made sure my dad was on track, which was awesome.
Of course. And siblings, Shruti?
I have an older sister and a younger brother.
Okay. How much of an age gap was between you and your older sister?
4 years between my sister and I, and 6 years between my brother and I.
Okay. And what about school? Where did you go to school, your primary school?
I went to school in a school called St. Xavier's in Borivali. In Borivali, Bombay, basically, yeah, which is first grade to 10th grade, yeah.
Wow. And how was that? How was the school environment? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, that was funny. Since my children are now going to school, it's like rubber meets road on what really do I believe in education. But St. Xavier's was a startup by this guy named A.F. Pinto, who was a principal or something of the school. But he was starting up. It was amazing. He started up where the first two classes were in like the back of some garage. So like shutters, wow, and things like that. And we were probably one of the first couple classes. And since then, I think he started like 100, 200 some schools all around the country and the world. So
wow,
he's started from St. Xavier, St. Lawrence, St. whatever other schools and branches. And it's impressive what he's built. So the school technically grew as I grew. Wow. And it was fascinating to see that it didn't matter what we learned and what brought me here.
But were you a good student?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely a good student. Always a pleaser.
Of course. Any specific subjects that you enjoyed?
I don't remember at this point. I'm too far out to remember what I enjoyed my first to 10th grade. I think I've since then progressed to not be a good student, but I've continued to have many degrees. So that's a pretty good conflict of background with who I really am.
So obviously you said you're a good student, but you don't remember the subjects that you were driven to.
I was always like first to third as a student overall. So it doesn't matter what subject it was.
Okay. How about sports? Any sports activities?
Not really. I was athletic, but I don't think the school had a good focus on athletic outside of the general PE. Yeah. Did you go to school in India? You
did. St. Xavier's.
You said which St. Xavier's?
Ahmedabad.
Okay. Probably not the same one. There were a lot of them in India.
No.
There's some very good ones. I definitely did not go to the best St. Xavier that probably is referred to in Bombay.
Okay. But how about friends? Did you make any friends during that time period? How was it like, the social environment and
sports? The social environment was different. You did make friends, but usually you didn't hang out with them. In a place like Bombay, you are focused more on your family. And so for us, in our family, what was more relevant was we would always go back to Gujarat, where I was born, mm-hmm. where my mom's parents and like my mama and extended family from my mom's side was. So we spend a lot of months of the year, actually, in Gujarat, which is why it's a conflict.
Especially
summers, Christmas breaks. Diwali, yeah, many breaks.
And mom's family was there. Anyone specific that you were close to on that side? On
the whole family, we would get together as a 15, 20 kids basically at all times in many cases and just hang out. So the cousins were all close to age. And that was actually the big portion of my life, which I remember.
Good memories, hopefully. As far as homework is concerned, was dad or mom helping at all?
Yeah, definitely. My mom was my mom ran a business to do tuitions. She was very clever. Since I was a good student, she used me as a way to do tuitions. And then she would get all the kids around and we would do it together. So then she made money by doing that.
Educating you and making money.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a true entrepreneur.
Yes, exactly. So she found...
Wow.
She used me as a way to share my books with other kids, use that as a model to run a small operation here.
Did you realize what she was doing at that time?
Look, I'm a good student, so it always was let's keep going here. It was someone's following my footsteps. Why wouldn't I like that? That's the culture.
Yeah. No, I get that. Dad, were you close to your dad or your mom or both?
Both. My dad was, he was setting up businesses.
Of course.
And I think...
Traveling?
Yes, a lot, working a lot. They were both around. I think it was more a matter of in what way.
Yeah. That's true. And so when you were graduating out of Xavier's, where did you go next?
I went to a junior college in Bombay called Mitibai for a couple of years. And then after that, I've since moved to the U.S. And since I've been here since then.
So what were you doing in Mitibai and how was that experience going from a Catholic school to Mitibai?
It doesn't matter. I think religion was never part of our school at Xavier's.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I meant the way that environment is.
Oh, it's different college.
I was not talking about religion.
Yeah. Mitibai is a college which came with a lot of fanfare. A lot of celebrities and their kids went to Mitibai. It's in the Liparla, Santa Cruz area, which is where Juhu area where a lot of celebrities and their kids lived. And it was a very good commerce arts school. And I went to the science wing or section of it, which meant I was very studious and nerdy. But it was certainly a great eye-opening experience to experience a lot of people that were not like you and have a campus that was like you saw in the movies, literally.
So what did you feel? You felt that you didn't fit in?
Oh, I don't think I ever fit in anywhere growing up in India.
You didn't?
No, I don't think so, no.
Why?
We're going to go into many different reasons, which probably are not appropriate for the
podcast. Wait.
Sorry?
This is your story.
It's not about my story. It's about the culture in India and as a woman wanting to succeed and the society. It's not a new finding. I didn't belong in India. And I've since then also didn't belong in other places in US too. So it's not a India thing. I think I finally found my home in San Francisco, which is where I am, where I get to nurture my creativity, uniqueness, a place where I don't have to blend in, which I think is full of people like that here. So I think that's where I find home.
You know, of course, all of us have a journey that brings us hopefully to the places we want to, our destination. But you know, trying to understand your journey, it's really important to know.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those things probably have made you who you are.
Yeah, just the thing is, I feel like there's nothing new about that, right? Like growing up in Bombay, it was not a safe place to get out of the house after 8, 9, 10 p.m. by yourself, especially not a girl, right? Like those kinds of things definitely shaped me and definitely wanted me to not be around that environment. But that's not a unique experience. It's everybody, unfortunately. But I don't think that would like in itself have shaped me, I would say. Again, if it was the thing, that only thing that shaped everybody, I would say that everybody would be here today. I think it's not the case.
No, of course. But maybe one of the reasons you wanted to leave was partly because of that.
Oh, yeah.
To come to the U.S.
Sure. I think
all those things add up to where you end up, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to get at, is trying to find out what.
To be clear, we didn't move here because of me. I didn't move to the U.S. because of me. We moved here because we immigrated as a family.
Okay.
So it wasn't my decision, but I would have at some point probably. Sure. That was up to me, maybe.
Okay. So you finished Mithibai and then the family decided to move here, Shruti?
We were one of those families that came here on the, I don't know the visa name, but it's the green card application that your family applies. We've had relatives here. My dad's sister and other brothers were here. So they'd applied for our green card, I would say 13 to 15 years ago. That's the classic process. So we somehow knew we were going to always be here in the U.S., I just never knew when. And so that was what happened. So when we did get the, I guess, letter from the U.S. government that you were approved, my parents actually postponed it a little bit. So it would line up with after me finishing up my 12th grade. So I think we waited maybe a year or something of that effect. I have no idea. I was too young to know the details. But then we all came to Poughkeepsie, New York, which is where my relatives were. Mm-hmm. And then my parents actually left a month later and I stayed.
They went back?
They went back to Bombay.
Bombay. And you stayed in Poughkeepsie, New York, the home of IBM, so to speak.
That's exactly right, why I ended up at IBM. So I then figured out I had to get into college, which I didn't know. So... Mm-hmm. I taught myself how to code that summer of 99, got a job at a college in Poughkeepsie, Marist College, and then basically worked there over the summer, convinced them to accept me as a student without the SAT scores. They did accept me and started my undergrad there while I was still working at the computing lab. And then my second year of college, I started working at IBM as an intern, co-op as well. Mm-hmm. So that started my 10-year journey at IBM, actually.
Wow. So tell me, Bombay to Poughkeepsie is a pretty interesting journey. Reverse culture shock. Weather-wise also, I would say a little bit, right? So how was that when you landed in Poughkeepsie and then mom and dad just left and said, okay, may the force be with you?
Yeah, how was that? It's complicated. I was certainly given a choice to go back, but what was I going to do? And already seen like 2 seconds of a different life that I wanted in some ways. So I think I decided to stay. I don't think the offer to go back to India was also real anyways. So I think the objective is very clear. Get into a college. Find a place where we can all live. We're going to come back in 2 years when your brother's ready to go to high school. Get a car. Be settled, basically. So when we come back, your brother can go to a good high school. So that was the objective. How did it feel? I think the culture we are from, at least I cannot generalize, but my understanding of it is it's less emotion-driven and more execution-driven. So as a 17-year-old, when I was charged with those...
Responsibilities?
Yeah, responsibilities or goals, I just marched towards that without questioning as to is that even appropriate. So I did. Hindsight, I don't know. Would I do that to my child? I have no idea. But here I am because of all those situations I was put in. And then my brother came back 2 years later with my parents. I did have a house and a car and stuff ready. And it was in a school district that he ended up liking. I ended up working with him on the classes and things he should take so he could get into the best college, Ivy League college that I couldn't get into. Yeah, so then he ended up going to Penn on his merit, obviously, but I was involved the first year of trying to set him up into the kind of classes and extracurricular activities and PTA meetings and things like that I should be doing. So it was an interest. I feel like I've already put a child to college in some ways, although I haven't done that kind of... He was a good kid not on my basis, because of my parents' basis. So he followed the instructions and delivered. So yeah, I think that was a pretty unusual... I think that is a story that is pretty typical of like last generation of Indians that came here in the 60s and 70s. I think that's pretty unusual from my experience. I've never heard a lot of people experience that in like the 2000s. So yeah, I think that's...
For a 17-year-old, that's pretty unusual. We've gone through a lot of stories on this podcast, but that's pretty unusual.
Yes.
To have, best way to put it is big responsibilities when the 17-year-old is still trying to figure her world out too.
I think the message was, that's a good path. You'll get there anyway. But in the meantime, this is all the other things we have to do. Yeah.
So when you look back, that kind of has shaped you too.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely shaped me. It's definitely a place where I look back and with a lot of questions and doubts, but at the same time, it doesn't scare me, like what my kids are going to do. I have a lot of data points on me. Good student or not, I don't even remember what I learned the first 10, 12 years of my life. And then raising my brother, I didn't raise him, but like my parents, seeing him being raised a certain way and my sister raised a certain way, I feel like a reflection of all that ends up being like, it's not what you teach them, it's what kind of grit they're able to build around themselves. And it's a thing that constantly is on my mind. I live in San Francisco, which is supposed to be poor public school district. So that's why it's on my mind a lot, on like, how far do I plan on putting my kids here? What school districts, public school, private schools, does it matter? Anyway. Those are the questions that are top of mind right now.
Shruti, just finishing up one thing. Do you think if those responsibilities had not been put on you, maybe you would have made different choices?
Maybe, because I did come here thinking, oh my God, my dad's in this construction world and he respects architects. So I'm going to be an architect. That's funny. Like, I think there were celebrities at the time. Like Aishwarya Rai was an architect or something. I don't fully remember at this moment. Oh, if she was one and she's supposed to be smart, I'm going to be one. And then I was going to be a fashion designer. Who knows? And then I came to this realization where my parents were like, you have to make money and you have to support initially your brother and us, like just for short period of time or whatever, the brass tack was like, yeah, how am I going to make money? So I studied computer science instead. So I think it's like a, what was I made to do? Who knows? Everybody here is like my calling. So I actually haven't landed on that on my own, like my calling and what I end up, what do people end up want to be? I think it's like a nature versus nurture has never been my, it's never been like a something I've landed on a good answer for. I do think, I feel like if you are put in a harsh situation, you grow. Like the lotuses and these beautiful flowers we know, they grow in like the hardest places. And so in my opinion, hard work and circumstances really can make you thrive. But unfortunately, I've also seen other situations where people don't thrive. In fact, they go the other way. So I actually haven't landed on that answer on what it is. Like, is that the reason why I'm successful or not? I have no idea. I do know I'm driven. Okay. I've always been driven. I'm a problem solver. I don't believe in complacency. I've never been. I like things. I'm an executor. And I think those qualities, maybe in addition to the environment I'm put in, made me thrive. Yeah.
So 10 years at IBM, how was that?
Oh, it was great. I think I thrived. Like, I never knew what a corporate job was. Nobody in my family had one. We come from a business family of Gujarati people. So I think I didn't have examples, didn't know anything, didn't know how to navigate it, but I did. I had four or five different jobs at IBM, starting like working on some of the hardest teams in tech to working for the CEO chairman's office in the end by the last 10th year. And so I climbed the ranks really well on my own accord. But I always knew this. The thing was, I didn't have too much to lose. I always knew that was like a stepstone to something bigger. I was just paying my dues. I wanted to get a degree, which was Ivy League, in my opinion, that was important. So I continued on. They paid for it. I got my degree in computer science from Columbia after that. And then I was like, okay, but then they paid for it. So I had to pay dues for 2 more years. It was always like, once I paid through all these things, then I'm going to go start a company with very little consequence. Looking back, I would do everything very differently. But at the same time, who's to say that I'm still going to be here? Those things did shape me, and those people and those networks and those amazing experiences and people telling me how awesome I am. I've never heard those things in my life where people just telling you that you're amazing, right? Like, you're so good, you're going to succeed. And like, those empowering things matter. And so maybe I needed to hear it. And so by a certain point, I believed it. And that's when I was like, I'm going to go start a company. So I took my computer science thesis work and stuff to go start a company, which I failed at miserably. And so then I was like, wow, why did I fail? So again, as a problem solver, I was like, oh, there's this thing, venture capital has a particular path to success. I'll learn all about it. So then I was also in a business school at the time at UChicago. And it was a great place for me to switch into venture. So I said, okay, I'll go into venture. One of the hardest jobs to get into, but it didn't matter to me. It didn't even occur to me. In fact, it was a great challenge again. There's a problem solver in me. I'm like, I'm going to reverse engineer venture-backed companies and what makes them successful. So got into that path, got into a corporate venture firm at Samsung after business school. Then I went to another great venture firm, Silicon Valley venture firm called True Ventures. And then I said, okay, I think I figured it out. I'm going to go start something. That's what ended up happening. What I ended up starting was not a venture-backed company, but instead I now fund venture firm. I'm a venture firm that funds venture-backed companies. So the ultimate realization was I learned a lot along the way of what it takes to build great businesses, venture-backed businesses. And from there to like now, instead of me building them, I thought I was really well served to help amazing founders who are in my shoes, who have no idea on what it takes. So I felt like I was like a conduit in some ways to help these amazing technical founders to go build that. And that's where I am 10 years in. That's what I've been doing. And that's what my firm does as well.
No, that's an amazing journey. You wanted to start something of your own. Why? What was the driving factor in starting?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Don't know. I think I just saw that. That was like in my blood in some. That's part that I think is more innate. I just knew that I felt like my dad instilled this, or like my family instilled this in me. You don't work for anybody. So the fact that I worked at IBM was a suffocating thing. In fact, I was doing well, but it was like a suffocating thing for me. Like, why am I doing this for other people? Why would I work hard for other people? Like, I always believed in growing my own equity and wealth on my own accord. And now you may argue the other side of it. Wow, that is a more harder, but it never occurred to me that was hard. To me, that was more of a natural path to success. So again, maybe it's like a intuitive math and not a direct math. Now I can do that math and say I put all the eggs in the basket that I believed in, which was me, and they have a higher potential of growing 10x than your salary. But again, looking back, I can like try to create a picture for you on that journey and story. I don't think it ever occurred to me that was on the path. So to me, the path was I'm going to build a tech company, and that's what I knew about, and that's, but I didn't do it well.
Yeah.
That's where I am. And then I started again. I started a fund. So it's clearly I didn't learn something.
But you still made it. Now tell me, after you started your first venture, which kind of didn't work out, and that happens in many cases, how was that? What went through your mind at that time?
As I said, problem solving is my first goal. Like, why didn't it work? Let's just figure it out. And that's the whole, I had created a backup. First, when I started the venture, the business, I was like, oh, and I should go to business school because that's what the word is about, business. All wrong decisions, but it ended up working for me so well. I went to the top business school in the world where I had access to amazing people. So when I was starting a company, I surrounded myself with people who would question me and tell me, and I would go knock on their doors and be like, why am I failing? And I think I had that ability to not take it so personally. And so I think I went and did that. And I think people said, for right or for wrong reasons, that they didn't understand my business. Now, hindsight, I was in the wrong place, in the wrong market. I was starting a tech business in Chicago 12 years ago. That was not a full-on real thing. So I was surrounding myself with maybe not the perfect people, but I did surround myself with people that were better than me at that time. So looking back, I think it was very clear. I said, okay, I'm not doing well. So I'm going to figure out. Again, it was like, I'm going to figure out why I didn't do well. So then that was a perfect environment again to be in to get that launch pad into venture capital, which is actually very hard. If you just wake up one day and say, I'm going to get into venture capital, it doesn't happen. But if you wake up one day and you're at the top business school in a good program, at right age, whatever, and you then say, I'm going to get into venture capital, you have a higher chance of getting into that path. So I was placed in the right place. I had the right surrounding of people and backing at that point. Again, professors, everybody around me believing in me, wanting to back me to say, you should do it. Writing the right recommendations, writing the right referrals. So I think being a good student paid off in that way. Because even though I didn't like studying, I knew how to get grades. So they thought I was smart enough to back me. So I think all in all, I think problem-solving mindset really helps.
And you touched on this, and this is a theme that we address in all our podcasts, the role of mentors. How important has that been in your journey?
It's very important, but I don't have one. In IBM, I had the program, my inner mentor program, and I had some couple good ones. I was good enough to go seek out like the best people. To this day, I can email them 12, 15 years later, and they're still amazingly responsive, thoughtful, helpful. But in many ways, I believed in having a good panel of advisors around me. The more important thing I believe in is asking the right questions to these panel of people. I know what questions to ask, where I can frame the question in 10 words or less. So it could be a complicated situation. I don't need to go on and on about it. And I know who to go ask so they can respond to me in 10 words or less. And then I go marching into solving the problem again. And so that's, I think, the skill that most people should develop on who to reach out to. Not just one person, because one person doesn't have all the life experiences you need. But having access to those amazing board of people around you, board of advisory supporters. And I've done so much in my life now that every stage I call on different people. To this day, I call people from my IBM days. It could be for personal reasons. It could be for whatever reason. I also believe that advice comes from everybody. It's about like how you take it. So advice means I'm just like talking through my problem with people and what they say matters. It could be anybody on the street. So I think I do have that mindset of having an open mind to having someone give you that nudge or pointer or a light bulb from something that can then help you go solve that problem.
Yeah. As you said, advice can come from anybody, and you should have a diverse set of advisors, mentors. Maybe the word mentor has become a cliche, but you know, your personal advisor, I think it's for people who are listening, that's an important message to them. Shruti, you obviously have worked in companies, started companies, and now you're investing or advising companies. What part do you enjoy? If you look at the three different journeys that you've had, what is the thing that resonates most with you? At this moment, maybe.
No, I think that's an unfair question because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I wasn't excited about it. That's for sure. So I love what I do. It's also, I love what I do because it also feels like another challenge. I'm doing something that very few people in the world get a chance to do, especially very few women in the world get a chance to do. So it feels like there's something bigger to it than just me and my drive to success, right? It's a message and setting an example and whatever, if you will. So I love what I do. And I'm so lucky to be able to get this chance to take money from people who believe that I'm going to help them grow that money, which is important. That's venture capital. So I'm not just here blowing money off, right? People are not giving me money for charity. They're giving me money with the hope and idea that I grow money for the right endowment so they can give the scholarship to the right person. So it trickles down. When I grow this money, it affects a lot of people in many different ways. So that's what's exciting for me.
Yeah. Shruti, you touched on something which I addressed right in the beginning, that you are doing something people would say, at least at this point, is still a reasonably male-dominated environment. How has that journey been for you?
Again, I could just use that as a way to stop me, or I could use that as a way to empower me. I win deals because I'm one of the few women enterprise investors in the world at the stage I am at. So it works in my favor. There is a generation of people coming up, men and women and everybody else, who are coming and saying, you are different than what is out there. We want your money. Because they're trying to set an example for themselves, for their spouses, for their moms, for their sisters, for their kids. So I can see it's hard. It is. But at the same time, it's also easier. I can win deals for reasons that other people will never be able to win them for. So I think I'm pretty proud of that fact. As I said, that's what keeps me driven to be something bigger than what I was born with.
Of course. Shruti, you've come a long way, but there is still so much of this journey left. Where do you see, it's hard to predict in the world that we live in, but if you were to just look a little further down in the future, where do you see this journey going?
Look, I think I want to build a really top-notch brand firm. For me, that's important. That's what I mean by, I have a very famous last name. I'm privileged again with that, Gandhi. And his famous line is, my life is my message. And in some ways, again, it was easy message and slogan for me to live by. My life is my message is what I want to live by. So if I create something that people can write about or talk about, and say, this woman who came out of nowhere, didn't go to Stanford or Harvard or whatever, all the top schools, didn't go to the right, I don't know, boarding schools and prep schools and stuff, but somehow made it happen. I can too. I think that, and look at all the successes she was able to achieve despite having the saying that you need to be part of the old boys club or the network or whatever it is. So I think that in itself, I'm probably like 25% there, maybe. I have 75% to go. So I'm just at the beginning. And so in the infancy or the teen years, and so in my opinion, I'll make it, I'll feel like that's where I have to go. Well, like you talk about certain firms and you just, no-brainer, just want to take their term sheet and money. So we'll want to build something like that for the community I want to attract and the kind of people I want to back, which I think is a next wave of venture capital. It's not just the same old people who look like each other. So I'm going to be at the forefront of that diverse group of people. And companies,
well, that's,
and just companies are coming out of everywhere in the world today, right? People like the Indian people have done an amazing job in the last wave to set an example of breaking through that the ceiling of diversity. And now there's a lot more other work to be done. So now there's women, there is other kinds of diverse people. So I think I'm pretty excited about building a firm that can speak to a lot of different people.
That's fantastic. We've taken you into the future. We're going to just take you for a few seconds into the past. So just pretend I am Shruti, just that's coming out of college in Mumbai. What would be the one or two, three things that you would say, knowing what you know, to Shruti, who's just coming out of Mithabai College?
Honestly, first is luck. I got lucky. Look where I am without being in the right physical location where I had every opportunity to explore my strengths and weaknesses, I wouldn't be here. So I got lucky. Don't know what else to say about that. Second, yeah, I don't know. Look at everything as seek feedback. So if someone can say something back to you, don't take it personally and just use that as a way to challenge yourself and see how I can grow in a particular direction, experiment with your life. It's easy for, again, I have a hard time saying all this. It's easy for me to say all that because of what I started out by saying. If I was in India, I don't know I would have ever been able to say all these things with confidence or have the platform to even achieve in any possible way. So I would have been expected to get married, have children. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. So I can say all this, but the people listening out there, please don't judge me because I feel your pain. If you don't have the platform, find some other alternative to express yourself. I remember when I was watching like the whole Taliban taking over Afghanistan situation. And then there were like these women secretly doing TikTok videos to protest. It wasn't going well for them, but they were putting their life out there for it. And so I think like you can find many ways to express yourself in ways that you don't get stopped or judged, especially in this today's world of social media. So find some alternative to that outlet in some way. Build a followership in whatever your passion is. Could be women's rights, or it could be cooking, or it could be whatever else. So being a great mom, there's outlet for everything today. And I think that I can tell you that you could invest in that for sure and find a way to thrive and create a platform for yourself, even despite where you're born.
Excellent. Shruti, we generally end with two questions to almost all our guests. So if you can just give us a brief answer on that. One is, what is your definition of Indianness? And we are creating a cloud of all our guests' answers to figure out what they say. So we'd love to hear what your definition of Indianness is.
Culture, values, community. Yeah.
Okay, great. Final question. One person, Shruti, that living, not your family, either in India or anywhere in the world, who is of Indian origin, that inspires you?
Oh, yeah. I should have looked at that question carefully. I don't think I have one person in mind. I do wonder.
Two, three.
I'll tell you who. I have a persona in mind.
I'm
always in awe with every woman who breaks through. Mm-hmm. And that tells you something about how I feel about that. But I'm in awe with every woman who mm-hmm. breaks through, what backing they had, what kind of parents they had, she had, the kind of environment that she grew up in, just to see, yeah, it's just to see what they had been offered to succeed and why others don't have that platform. It's a big mission of mine. And I think, there are some obvious names like Indra Nui and things like that, but I think they had an unfair advantage. But I look for the other ones, especially like there are so many CEOs of great banks and so forth in India. I'm constantly looking at their bio and their magazines. Unfortunately, not a lot is written on them, which is odd. A lot is written on their success today, but not about their past. But as you're covering these stories, I would love to find out more on what got them there and why they were able to break out versus other people.
We are covering a lot of these stories, and we'll share them with you of leaders, but especially their backgrounds. But you made a good point. Women leaders who have made it, especially the ones who are not in as much of a limelight as what you're saying. And that's a great point. And we will also focus a little bit on that, Shruti. Thanks for that insight. But Shruti, I want to really thank you for taking the time. I know how busy you are with all the things, your commissioner job, your companies, etc. But thanks for opening, thanks for sharing, and thanks for inspiring all our guests. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Sanjay. I appreciate your questions.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Indianist Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.